This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla session. That's an opportunity for you to pose your questions, and we'll endeavor to answer them. That is yours truly and Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mudin. Layla is a registered dietitian. She also holds a master's degree in the field of nutrition, and each week we answer your questions via podcast. And the way to get us questions is radioprogram@AOL.com. Send us via email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll answer your questions, as many of them as we can. But before we get to questions, we want to update you on the continuing saga of one of our Hoffman Center employees. By the way, hi, Layla. How are you?
Great. How are you, Dr. Hoffman?
Good. Many of you who listen regularly to the podcasts have heard me talk to Grimaldi Vargas, and you may have read my newsletter article on the condition of underweight, of which she was sort of the poster girl. She came to the Hoffman Center weighing it at a featherlight 74 pounds, and she built herself up. And to her amazement, in addition to having a very nice young girl, she had a baby, she now has undertaken ultra-endurance sports events, having completed a Spartan race, and I wanted her to share with you her latest exploit. So, Layla, can you put Grimaldi on the phone with me for just a moment?
I'm here.
Hi, Grimaldi. How you doing?
Hi.
Good. So, you know, a lot of our listeners, they know you as the cheerful voice who greets them when you call the Hoffman Center dispensary to order vitamins and supplements. Or alternatively, if they don't even hear from you, you're the one who receives their email requests or online requests. drhoffman.com has online capabilities. People order vitamins and supplements from you, but you're not just a disembodied person working in the bowels of the Hoffman Center. You're also a personality known to them via some of our articles and our podcasts, and you just completed something quite extraordinary, right? You just did a Spartan race. We interviewed you before, so what ended up happening?
Well, the Spartan Super consisted of, it was 8.5 miles long. It was about 25 obstacles, if I'm not mistaken, so definitely double than the first one.
So this is the second one you did?
Yes, this is the second one. And in this race, it took a lot of, I guess, determination to complete it, because I did have to overcome one of my fears, which is swimming.
So here's another weird thing about this. A lot of people, they know what's ahead of them in this race, but this race is, there's sort of, it's like a secret course. It's like classified information, and it's all these obstacles, which they then reveal to you, you know, at the beginning of the race. And unbeknownst to you, there were these swimming obstacles, and you're not a big swimmer. In fact, you had a major aversion to water, right?
Yes.
So what ended up happening?
Well, I figured since one of my team members is a good swimmer, I'll just get on his back and we'll swim across. And, of course, that wasn't allowed, so we had to get out of the water. And I had to put on a life vest, where one of the staff members that actually works for the race encouraged me that I was able to do it. The first part of it wasn't that deep, and then there was a dock, that's where I was kind of panicking and having anxiety. I was about to cry because there was no way I was going to swim. I don't even know how long it was. To me, it seemed forever.
So you were fine with the running part and the climbing part,
correct,
and all the, you know, the obstacles, but when it came to water, that was your weak suit, right?
Yes, it was.
So what ended up happening?
I managed. They encouraged me to get in, that I would be okay, and when I actually did it, I was still kind of panicking and having anxiety. I was holding on to the rope, just in case. And then finally, one of the lifeguards that was there just said, everything's going to be okay. You actually did it. And sure enough, I swam across, and it was a good feeling that I actually accomplished something that I have been afraid of my whole life.
Well, that is fabulous, because in a lot of ways you've transcended some liabilities. You've gained healthy weight and you've conditioned your body, and now you've transcended your profound fear of swimming. So what's in store for you? You got another race coming up?
Yes, I have another race. It's the Spartan Beast, which is the last race.
The Beast, it's called.
Yes, it's called
okay.
The Beast.
Wow.
And this one is 12 and a half miles, and I believe it's 25 to 30 obstacles. Again, we don't know ahead of time what obstacles we're going to be facing. So definitely probably similar to the second one, the Super, but I know there's going to be additional obstacles that we're not going to know about. But I'm getting ready for that one.
So if water is one of the obstacles, you will be undaunted.
I am determined to cross that finish line.
Well, that's
even
great.
If I have to crawl, I'm going to get through it.
Oh, excellent. You know, you're just such an inspiration to all of us at the Hoffman Center and to many of our listeners. And we congratulate you. And, you know, also certainly part and parcel of your program is the nutritional support. And you can find out more about that because we did an entire podcast on the subject of whey protein. If you go to drhoffman.com and click on the listen button, go back through the podcasts about a week ago or so, we talked to Grimaldi. And then we talked about the health benefits of whey protein as a sports supplement for people who have difficulty gaining weight. You yourself, remind our listeners, you put on how many pounds of healthy weight?
I'm 23.
Whoa.
23.
So you got guns now. When you flex your biceps, you've got guns, right?
They're coming out, yes.
That's good. Awesome. Hey, congratulations. And so I think you need to go back to our supplement department and start filling out orders again. But thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, pass it back to Layla. Hey, Layla.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
Isn't that something? We're all so proud of her.
That really is something. She has so much determination. It's just wonderful. And listen, that is very courageous. Swimming, not everybody's a swimmer, and yet there are many people afraid of the water as well. Mm-hmm. She overcame all of that. That's tremendous.
Well, I love it. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of what we do, both you and I at the Hoffman Center, is we facilitate people's transformations. And so the Grimaldi's transformation is just but one among many transformations that we hope to inspire among not just Hoffman Center patients, but among, you know, certainly our staff, but also among listeners. So if you feel inspired, hey, take on whatever challenge you think is insurmountable. You can do it. And, you know, you will feel energized and, you know, you'll gain a lot of self-esteem.
Imagine if Grimaldi was working at a mainstream doctor's office.
Yeah, well,
you know, all the way up to here in paperwork and insurance companies and yada, 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 and all of that.
Not the least of which is the donuts, the potato chips, you know, the cupcakes, because that's how, you know, people pass the day. And it's like, okay, here come the donuts, you know, yay.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay, so, you know, we like to hear that. All right, so anyway, let's get back to some of our questions.
Yes.
What's on tap for today?
Okay, this comes to us from Ed. I welcome your suggestions and recommendations on medicines or supplements to treat peripheral neuropathy, specifically affecting my toes and balls of my feet. For example, would topical lidocaine be a good treatment? Others, thank you in advance for your guidance. I'm a male aged 82.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, we have to do one of our clinical focus podcasts on the subject of peripheral neuropathy, because it's a complex subject. There are many causes of peripheral neuropathy. One of the main causes is diabetes, but in some cases it's what's called idiopathic, which means there's no clear-cut cause. It could be related to B12 deficiency, it could be related to autoimmunity, it could be related to alcohol excess. There are a variety of ways that you get there to nerve damage. And so there are some, without knowing more about the history. Oh, by the way, one of the reasons for peripheral neuropathy is actually gluten. gluten can cause peripheral neuropathy. So in someone who has this condition, we might screen them for celiac disease or gluten intolerance. That would be important. Also check for B12 levels. B12 shots can be beneficial, even if B12 levels seem, you know, they're low normal. You might need B12 to make your nerves work better. Also, we would use alpha-lipoic acid, which has actually been proven to be helpful in diabetic neuropathy, fairly high doses. Yeah. In Germany, I think in some studies, they use as much as 3,000 of alpha-lipoic acid. Intravenous alpha-lipoic acid even has been proven to be helpful. We've done that in a few patients. What else have we got?
Benfotiamine,
yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, something that can help the nerves. Also, acetyl-L-carnitine. That's a form of carnitine that it's acetylated, so it makes it more more bioavailable to the nerve tissue. It actually seems to get in there and help support nerve function. So those are some of the things that we might use. You know, phosphatidylcholine, perhaps, because it helps with the myelin of the nerves. Those are some of the things that might be valid here. And, you know, so give it a shot. See what happens. Biotin, I think, has some claim to fame in terms of nerve protection. So there are a variety of things.
Okay, Ed, thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Brandy. She's a 50-year-old with a lot of bleeding, weight gain, urinary issues from a uterine fibroid.
Mm-hmm.
She would like to know, rather than having a myomectomy, if she can cure this holistically with diet, herbs, things to help shrink a fibroid, possibly. Anything like that?
I think one of the good books for this subject is by our good colleague, the holistic OBGYN, Dr. Warshawski, Alan Warshawski. Mm-hmm. And it's called, I think it's called Reversing Fibroids, something along those lines, something fibroids. And it's about a natural protocol for shrinking fibroids. Now, it's tough to do that, and I've interviewed him on this program, and he'd be the first one to admit that, you know, if you have very large fibroids and they're bleeding and they look suspicious, they could even conceal cancer, you have to pull a trigger. You have to actually have some form of surgery to remove the fibroids.
And even then, they can still grow back.
And then they can grow back. But there's some things that could be helpful.
There's some information on enzymes.
Sure.
Like pancreatic enzymes.
Proteolytic enzymes, Wob enzyme, things like that. We might use things to reduce estrogen dominance. That's a whole theme. I've written an article on it. It's pretty popular at drhoffman.com. And it means that at a certain point, women, perhaps 30, 40, or 50, they start to produce excess estrogen without progesterone. And the estrogen tends to promote, like, the proliferation of the lining of the uterus, causing excessive bleeding, and then sometimes fibroids. And so by reducing estrogen, one of the strategies for doing that is simply lose weight. You know, your excess body fat produces estrogen, becoming less constipated. Constipation slows the breakdown of estrogen in the body. Taking things like flaxseed, Breveil,
which
is flax lignans. Yes, that's a product that can be used to sort of take the edge off excess estrogen. Alpha, it's D-glucuric acid.
Yes, calcium D-glucurate,
Calcium D-glucurate is also a product that we use for that purpose.
And DIM.
There's another one that is, you know, so I've got to visit our dispensary some more.
It's Myomin.
Thank you so much. You know, together we have a brain. I mean, we do this all the time. I pick up the phone and sometimes I say, Layla, what's the name of that supplement? I can't forget the name of that supplement. And she comes up with an answer. But alternatively, if she's stumped, I can maybe, you know, help her.
Yeah.
It's like an aging couple. You know, it's like. So, but thanks for remembering that. Yeah, Myomin. It's actually an herbal product, and it is also helpful. You know, myoma is the word for the medical word for fibroid. So, you know, that I think addresses that problem sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, best of luck to Brandy.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Hopefully, well, you know, we're assuming that she has bleeding, so she's not in menopause. Possibly after menopause, there can be shrinkage of fibroid tumors, but not necessarily all the time.
I mean, if you could, if you're like 48 or something, you can hold out till menopause. However, you know, if you're 32 and you might look forward to, you know, 18 or more years of a menstrual history with a lot of bleeding and a lot of debility, I'm not obstinately opposed to surgery if it's if it's necessary. And, you know, a couple of times we found women, you know, where we said, look, I think you really need to get a hysterectomy. And what has happened, because, you know, I'm sort of like the court of last resort sometimes. People come in and say, is there anything that can be done? I said, I don't know. I don't think it's safe for you to keep going with such a large mass in your pelvis. And a couple of times we've found that cancer has lurked inside the fibroid. And the surgery was actually life-saving. It actually helped to prevent the spread of the cancer. Once it's metastatic, it's very hard to treat. But if before it spreads, it can be contained.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, best of luck to Brandy. This next question comes from Jam. She is a 79-year-old female with osteoporosis who's actually writing us to kind of vent a little bit. On her doctor's advice, she took the 2 years of Forteo, and then they started her on Boniva, but she's also having a problem with her jaw. So now she's starting to have some necrosis of the jaw, possibly.
Oh, wow. That's the dread condition that is associated with taking osteoporosis medications.
Yeah. So she's wondering if there's anything else at this point that could be done about this.
Well, okay. So let's just talk about that. With the drugs called bisphosphonates, they have been shown to create two problems. One, there's something called osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is literally the bone in the jaw dies. Necrosis means death. So the bone in the jaw dies. And that's a horrendous problem because then the teeth become loose. There's virtually nothing you can do about that, and it can be really painful. So when this was first described, they said, well, this is exceedingly rare. There may be just a handful of cases in our entire archives. And so we thought, well, you know, I guess it's worth it because osteoporosis is a terrible thing. And, you know, many drugs very rarely can cause side effects, but we still use those drugs. Well, a new study from Taiwan has shown that one in 200 patients who were taking these drugs developed osteonecrosis of the jaw. Now, that's somewhat rare. That's 0.5%. But, man, that means that thousands and thousands of women will develop this. And I hear this more and more. So if this is so rare, why am I hearing it all the time? And why is that study showing one in 200? The other problem is that these medications, the longer they're used, the more likely you'll get what is called an atypical fracture. A typical fracture is when the bone is thin, you know, and like, you know, you break your bone because it's weak. An atypical fracture means that the drug has caused damage to the bone that results in a fracture. And what they found is that if you take these medications for many years, you may have 100 times the risk of what's called an atypical pathological fracture that's drug-related, not due to the thinning of the bone you had in the beginning.
And the drug, because it's slowing down the turnover, is actually creating old, brittle bones.
Yes, yes, damaging the bone.
It's supposed to turn over, not rapidly, but it's still supposed to turn over. So, yeah, that's very discouraging.
Okay, so would this person be a candidate for, you know, our protocol, which involves vitamin K and vitamin D and strontium and osteosupport
and
Ostanol. Perhaps Ostanol is a new supplement we're using. That's bone morphogenic protein, which helps to stimulate bone repair. The answer is, you know, hopefully not too much damage has occurred. I haven't had the opportunity to treat too many patients who have osteonecrosis of the jaw. I would welcome that opportunity, but, you know, it's fortunately, none of our patients have had it because they don't use that many medications.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So best of luck to Jan. All right. Now, let's just go over that again. Things like strontium, Ostanol, vitamin K, vitamin D, magnesium, Ostera, osteosupport, these are the arsenal in our bone health program, as well as DHEA. We do like to measure your levels
yes.
first.
Yes, DHEA can be very helpful. And, you know, and for some women, you know, they... I saw a woman the other day who has bad osteoporosis, and she's 54, and I said, how do you feel? And she says, I'm fine. I said, did you go through hot flashes? Do you have any trouble sleeping? Do you feel really bent out of shape by menopause? Are you having a lot of problems with sex? And she said, no, not to no to all those questions. So I said, hey, you know, then I guess hormone replacement isn't necessary. But by the way, hormone replacement therapy is only partially effective against osteoporosis. It's not that strong a countermeasure against osteoporosis. But we like to use not just estrogen and progesterone, but a little bit of testosterone, which has a bone-building effect, and some DHEA in women with osteoporosis. And that can also help mood and well-being and even libido, and yes. At the same time helping to build bone.
Okay. Best of luck to Jan. All right. Our next, actually, we've got, this comes from Brian. And this has to do with something he read on WebMD about answers to your questions about probiotics. And he was stunned because according to WebMD, it says here, and I'm going to quote it, are probiotics safe for everyone is the question. And the answer, part of the answer, although no studies have shown probiotics to be harmful in healthy people, Barry Golden, MS, PhD, at Tufts School of Medicine, says terminally ill cancer patients and people with conditions with the potential for leaky bowels, including acute pancreatitis, should not consume probiotics. And there was a study of patients with acute pancreatitis that showed that using probiotics doubled their risk of dying. I don't have that actual study in right. front of me here.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is a good demarcation point because we split these podcasts yeah. into two parts, and we'll keep our audience in suspense, and when we return in part two, we'll address the question of, are probiotics safe? Are there certain circumstances where you may want to avoid probiotics? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here today with Layla Mutin, Hoffman Center Nutritionist. It's Q&A with Layla, answering your questions, and we'll be right back with part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.